This is the Financial Sense News Hour. With the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income on the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's show is about government benefits. We're going to start out talking about Social Security benefits, and later on in the program, I'll be talking with Peter Gravett. He's Secretary of California's Department of Veteran Affairs.
You know, Jim, I was thinking the Social Security program has been around for a really, really long time, sort of came out of the Great Depression. So it's been around since 1935. I think a lot of people don't know the real name of Social Security benefits that they have. There's actually four different benefits underneath Social Security Act. The Old Age and Survivors Insurance, which is what most of us mean when we talk about Social Security. It's that OASI deduction you see on your paycheck every month. Disability insurance, supplemental security income, and Medicare. Jim, we've already had several shows about both Medicare and Social Security here on Lifetime Income. I'm thinking of your interviews with Yolanda York, who's the Social Security Public Affairs Director here in San Diego County. And for those listening, you can find those programs by going to financialsense.com and typing in Yolanda. But Jim and I just want to touch on a few points that have come up over these interviews and make sure that we cover sort of the basics of Social Security in case you haven't had a chance to listen to those programs we've done with Yolanda York and others.
Yeah, I want to start out with something that's just basic because there have been a lot of changes that have occurred, and especially beginning in the last decade, in the year 2000. And that is what is called full retirement age. And that is when you get 100% of your Social Security benefits. Now, if you were born before 1937, your full retirement benefit is at age 65, meaning you would get 100% of what you're eligible for Social Security. Now, for us boomers, or anybody born after 1937, but before 1943, your full retirement benefit is still age 65 plus 2 months for every year past 1937. It gets a little complicated. However, if you were born between 1943 and 1957, your full retirement age, which is most of us boomers, is age 66. Now, if you were born after 1954, but before 1960, then we have to do a little bit more math. It's age 66 plus 2 months for every year past 1954. So, for example, if you were born after 1960, your full retirement age is age 67. It sounds a little complicated. So the one thing you can do is you can go to the retirement age calculator. They actually have one on the Social Security website. That's socialsecurity.gov. And just put your age, your birth date, it will calculate all of that for you.
So Jim's been sort of covering a little bit about the full retirement age. People often want to know, what's the earliest I can take benefits? For most people, the earliest you can take benefits is age 62, but your benefit's going to be reduced. Depending on what year you were born, your benefit would probably be reduced by either 25% or 30%, which is a pretty hefty deduction. So something you would definitely want to think over before you make that decision. I guess the other side of the equation here is, what's the latest you can delay taking benefit? Because every year after your full retirement age, you delay taking benefits, you accrue additional monthly benefit from the Social Security Administration. So the latest you can accrue benefits or start taking benefits is age 70.
Also, too, there are other types of benefits, Kathleen, that our listeners need to be aware of that are available before age 50, such as, for example, a widow or widower benefits, which can start as early as age 60, although the benefit is probably going to be reduced if it's taken this early, or, for example, a disabled widow or widower's benefits, which can start at age 50. So the benefits are available at various ages. And also, for example, disabled children as well. I know when I was going through college, one of my roommates was receiving benefits because he had been raised by his grandparents, but he had lost his parents at an early age to a car accident. So there are a lot of things out there. I don't care if it's Social Security or it's veteran benefits that people simply aren't aware of and are not taking advantage. And that's why we wanted to cover that on the program today.
Jim, I think another basic question I think a lot of our listeners don't really understand is, how is the Social Security Administration determining the size of my benefit? So the bottom line is, right now, the Social Security benefit program, it's based on credits that you earn. And in 2013, you can earn one credit for every quarter you pay Social Security taxes and earn at least $1,160 that quarter. If you're self-employed, that's only $400 a quarter. So the earning minimum for the credit usually increases every year. Generally speaking, you need at least 40 credits, in other words, the equivalent of 10 years worth of work, to be eligible for retirement benefits. But accruing 40 credits doesn't mean that you automatically qualify. Right now, in most cases, you'll need to work a little bit longer before you actually can acquire those benefits or be eligible for those benefits, even if you already have 40 credits.
And right now, if you retire, for example, let's take this year, 2013, the maximum benefit that you can receive is $2,533. If you retire at age 62 in 2013, because that's less than your full retirement age or FRA date of age 66, the maximum benefit is about $1,923. Now, if at age 70, if you turn 70, let's say this year you've been working, the maximum benefit is $3,350. And we actually have a couple clients that, especially in the medical field, a lot of doctors who stayed on did work and did not take their Social Security benefits. But I want to get to some reason why we made them change that, because of some law changes that went into effect in 2000 that affected your Social Security benefits if you work before age 70. We'll get to that just in a moment here. But anyway, the Social Security Administration has a maximum family benefit, which is usually 150 to 180% of your full retirement benefit. The minimum benefit is actually greater than a dollar.
I think also, Jim, because we're talking about government benefits here, it's important for our listeners to know that certain types of government pensions and benefits will actually reduce your eligibility or reduce the amount that you're eligible for from the Social Security Administration. Example, people who worked a government job where they didn't pay Social Security taxes typically reduce, especially survivors' benefits for Social Security. They call this a government pension offset, or GPO. So let's just give an example. So let's say that your government pension is $600 a month. Two-thirds of that amount, or $400, is going to be applied as your reduction against your Social Security benefit. So let's say your Social Security benefit is $500. That benefit's going to be reduced by $400, meaning you're only going to get $100 of your $500 Social Security benefit because you're already collecting benefits from another government program.
And I want to get to something that a lot of people have been reluctant to, let's say, apply for Social Security benefits, and that is, can I collect Social Security while I'm working? And I think this is going to surprise a lot of our listeners, Kathleen, because the answer to that is yes. If you are at full retirement age and working, let's say you're age 66, you can start drawing your full benefit and keep working, and the government's not going to penalize you. So you can draw benefits earlier too, but if you withdraw those benefits earlier, then the benefit amount will be reduced on the amount that you're earning. So the key thing here is you got to reach full retirement benefit. If you do that, then you can work and not get penalized for receiving Social Security. So if you go to the Social Security website, there's a retirement planner. It's called Getting Benefits While Working, and that page helps outline the formulas for the reduced benefit. And I think that's really important because we've had a lot of people. I can remember a couple of years ago, one of our clients was a doctor, and I had mentioned this in our client-only meeting that we put on once a year for our clients. And he came up afterwards, and he said, you know, I'm 66. You telling me that I can get Social Security? And I said, absolutely. And so he's now getting Social Security and still working.
Yeah, still working. I think something else, too, is to kind of know your benefit if you're divorced. This is actually something I think a lot of people don't know or don't have a grasp on, which is, and here's the requirement. So if you're interested in collecting on your divorced spouse's work record, this is a criteria you need to meet. You have to be married to your former spouse for at least 10 years. You need to be at least 62 years old. You need to be unmarried. And you also need to not be entitled to higher benefits on your own work record. So if those are all the case, you can qualify to receive a benefit based on your former spouse's work record. Now, if your former spouse died after full retirement age, you can actually start to receive benefits on their record if you're at least age 60 or if you're age 50 and disabled, and you were married to the spouse for at least 10 years and you're not entitled to benefits on your own record. So you can see here, Jim, that in certain situations, you can be well below the full retirement age and still collect benefits on either your own record or on someone else's record, which I think is something a lot of people aren't really aware of.
The other thing I want to get to, because a lot of people aren't aware of what their benefits, because a lot of the benefits which they used to send us out a couple times a year are now on the Social Security website. If you go to socialsecurity.gov, they have a retirement estimator on their website you can log in and use. Just plug in your various scenarios, or the SSA will send, you know, a Social Security statement via paper mail. But the online calculator is really especially useful because you can try various scenarios and say, well, what if I continue to work and don't take my benefits at a certain age, but my wife does, or vice versa, or even both of you? So you can put these scenarios in and just see what the benefits are going to be. And also, I think very importantly, because we do see a lot more widows and widowers today, what those benefits would be like for a survivor benefit. Or more importantly, what would happen if you delay taking your benefits for reasons like, well, you're working, you want to wait to your full retirement age. So there's a lot of great stuff there that you can look at that is going to help you, because let's put it this way, Social Security is a very important benefit for a lot of people, especially for the boomers, Kathleen, because unlike our parents that maybe went to work for companies, they got the gold watch, well, maybe not a gold watch, a Timex watch, and they got retirement defined benefit plans that gave them a certain percentage of their working salary. So they know it, pretty much like what happens in the government sector today. Government workers at the state, federal, or local level pretty much know they're in this defined benefit program, so that if they, you know, have 20 years of service, 25, 30 years of service, they can pretty much know exactly what they're going to get. So Social Security in the private sector is that one element of a pension plan where there's definite values there for contributions that you made over time and when you take them at what age. So please make that available to you, because it's a very important tool.
Jim, I'm really glad you mentioned this whole retirement estimator tool, because I think especially in a particular case, which is husband and wife who are both eligible for benefits, that it's really, really crucial that you take a look at this tool and punch in all different types of scenarios, because it can make a really significant difference in your overall lifetime payout from Social Security. I want to kind of just talk about a scenario that happened, Jim, with a couple we were doing some planning for, Mark and Mary. In this case, it's actually a little interesting. Mark's younger than Mary. He's 58, Mary's 62. And like I said, we met with him to do some retirement planning and came up with some recommendations for them. And it was one of those really tough conversations where significant decisions were going to have to be made. For example, they had a second home, a condo, more of a vacation type condo. They were there a couple months of the year doing skiing or vacationing or fishing and what have you. And the problem was that this condo was costing them about $15,000 a year with HOA fees and electricity and utilities and insurance and taxes. And really, it was interfering with their ability to save for retirement, because that $15,000, instead of going to retirement savings every year, was going for upkeep for this condo. So we suggested they sell the condo, which would have given them about $325,000 to tuck away for retirement savings and put away for income-producing investment assets, but they weren't really ready to sell the condo. Their whole plan was to leave the condo as a vacation home for all their kids to use and share, so we had to go to a plan B with them. Well, okay, you've got a pretty big home. It's worth about $750,000, lots of square feet. You're empty nesters, your kids are still around, but you could definitely downsize and reduce your roughly $20,000 of maintenance, taxes, upkeep fees, and costs, and get a smaller home that would cost you less to run, and put the proceeds from your sale of your bigger home toward income-producing assets. But Plan B wasn't an option for them either. They really weren't ready to downsize yet. They just had no interest in selling their homes or their condos, so we had to sort of come up with a different plan for them. And that plan basically involved working longer and being really, really smart about taking their Social Security benefits.
Yeah, because right now, Mark's benefit at his full retirement age at 66 is $2,000, and Mary's benefit would be about $800 a month, so $2,800 between them if they both wait to age 66. Now, when we met with him, and which is easier for Mary because she's older than Mark. Now, Mary was ready to start drawing her benefits right away, which would have meant that she would have only been eligible for about 75% of her benefits, or roughly about $600 a month. Mark, on the other hand, wanted to retire at age 62 as well and start drawing benefits, but his reduced benefits would have been $1,500 a month instead of $2,000 a month. So they would be drawing $2,100 a month versus $2,800. Now, folks, that's a lot of money. You know, that's about $8,400 less a year. So this was really impacting the viability of their retirement plans when we first met them. Because remember, Plan A, they didn't want to get rid of the condo. They wanted to keep that as a vacation home for them and their kids. They didn't want to downsize. They weren't quite ready to do that yet. I mean, there's just no way that the other assets and benefits were going to permit them to basically stop working at age 62 and keep both homes. It just didn't pencil out. So basically, under this situation, Mary and Mark's situation was rather interesting because, number one, Mark was younger than Mary. She was unable to draw a benefit based on his earnings record until he starts drawing a benefit because his benefit would have been larger. So she had to draw on her own earnings record, and at least until Mark reached the age where he could start drawing his own benefits. However, if she was to draw benefits before her full retirement age, she's not going to be eligible for the maximum spousal benefits, which is 50% of the spouse's benefit at full retirement age. In this case, it would have been $1,000. So if she started to draw her benefits early at age 62, her maximum benefit was going to be $800, which assumes, on the other hand, Mark being younger, would wait to draw his full retirement age benefits at age 66. So when they both would have reached age 66 or older, instead of drawing close to $3,000 a month, Mark's full benefit plus an additional 50% spousal benefit, they would only be drawing a little over $2,000. That's almost a $12,000 a year income difference. Folks, let me put this in perspective. $12,000, you don't think of how much capital in today's low interest rate environment you would need to have to generate that $12,000. So basically what we did is we suggested that Mary keep working to age 66 or four more years, then retire and draw her full benefit. And then once Mark retired at his age 66, both file for maximum benefits on Mark's earnings record.
I think this is really important, Jim, to talk about a little bit of comparative math here. So let's figure out what kind of investment asset base would be required to generate that $12,000 at an interest rate of, say, 3% per year, or a dividend rate of 3% per year, which I think is still pretty reasonable. So you divide that $12,000 of missed income by the 3%, you come up with $400,000. So it would take $400,000 worth of savings to make up that $12,000 a year income benefit. That's huge, Jim. That basically by waiting a few more years to retire and draw benefits, they've basically gotten a benefit that's the equivalent of them having saved a total of $400,000 over that same period of time. I mean, that's significant.
When you think about it, they both weren't making enough money. And I think really what sold them on the idea is, number one, they didn't want to sell the condo. Number two, they didn't want to downsize. They weren't quite ready for that, although I think in four more years they would. But the idea was, look, guys, if you don't want to sell the condo, don't want to downsize, you're going to need to have $400,000 of additional capital to make up the difference if you want to start taking your retirement benefits from Social Security now. And there's just no way that, you know, we could get those kind of returns. You know, we'd have to be making 20, 25% a year on their investments over the next 4 years to get that kind of capital. Basically, we would have had to double their portfolio in almost a four-year period of time. And so given the fact that they didn't want to sell the condo, they still enjoyed that, and they weren't ready to downsize, the solution to this case was simply working longer.
I think the other thing to think about too, Jim, is that when you're thinking about planning for a family especially in a spousal situation, you know, one of you may end up outliving the other. So we've talked about delaying benefits until full retirement age versus taking early. And there's some scenarios in which taking benefits early can work for one spouse versus the other. But I think it's also important to really review how your Social Security benefit is going to impact your spouse if something happens to you, because that can make a big difference to your spouse's ability to self-sustain if something happens to you. And again, calculators on socialsecurity.gov can help you do that.
Well, like we mentioned, you can do a lot of planning using the tools available at socialsecurity.gov, but there are some other fee-based tools that are helpful too, like, let's say, socialsecuritysolutions.com, and there's another website called maximizemysocialsecurity.com. So let me give you, there's three websites. The one that we talked about is Social Security's own website, which is socialsecurity.gov. That's all one word, socialsecurity.gov. The other one is Social Security Solutions, all one word, socialsecuritysolutions.com. And then the third one is maximizemysocialsecurity.com, all of those one word. So if you go to there, you can find and put together different scenarios, and it'll help sort you through this major decision. Because once you make that decision, it's permanent. So the bottom line is, don't be in such a hurry to retire or start drawing benefits that you end up accidentally sacrificing significant income for both you and your spouse.
I think it's also important here, Jim, to just, again, reemphasize that you really just want to be careful when with a spousal benefit, who takes out first and how much you draw and all that sort of thing, because it can make such a big difference over your lifespan. It's really a big difference. Jim was mentioning the socialsecurity.gov website. All the tools on that site are free. The other two tools that Jim mentioned, the socialsecuritysolutions.com and maximizemysocialsecurity.com, do charge a fee to use them. Jim, I was actually reading an article recently about the Social Security Benefit Program, and the author was sort of bemoaning the fact that none of us get any education about this when we're in school. There's no required training to go through to understand this benefit. And yet it's a program pretty much most of us here in the U.S. are going to take advantage of at some point or another in our lives. And we really need to understand how it works. So when you take your benefit and at what age you take your benefit can make a huge difference to your overall lifetime spending power. I think this is particularly true because Social Security is one of those few benefits that you have that is adjusted somewhat for inflation, because it's adjusted to CPI. I just want to have a little aside here before Jim starts talking with Peter Gravett about veterans benefits. I just want to say this is a pretty personal topic for me. My father was a Vietnam vet, and in the last few months of his life, he did take advantage of a lot of the VA benefit services. In fact, he was taken care of in a VA living facility where he was staying at the time, and they take fantastic care of him. So I really encourage all veterans or family members of veterans or friends of veterans to really pay attention to what Jim and Peter are going to talk about next, because they're going to cover a lot of benefits that are available to veterans, which include things like medical care and home care, schooling, insurance, home buying, and the list just keeps going on.
That's right, Catherine, because a lot like Social Security, I think many people don't take advantage of the benefits that are available to them, or they don't know how to maximize them because they're not aware of the options that are out there. So I'm hoping our listeners are going to get a better idea of what's available to veterans in their lives from my conversation with Peter Gravett. He's Secretary of the California Department of Veteran Affairs. That's coming up right after this. Joining me as my special guest on Lifetime Income this week is Peter Gravett. He's Secretary at the California Department of Veteran Affairs. And Peter, let's start out with some basics here. Who is eligible for veteran benefits? I mean, how many years in the service? Could you describe the eligibility, if you would?
Yes, the eligibility varies. Some veterans qualify, others do not. It's based upon a number of factors. First of all, any person that served in the military and that retired from the military is eligible for some benefits. Other veterans who did not retire but who may have suffered an injury or illness associated with their active duty military would also be eligible for veteran benefits, and therefore their families also in both cases.
Okay, so if I, let's say, made a career in the military, retired from the military, I have those benefits, or let's say I served in the military, got injured as a result of that, then I could qualify.
Yes, sir, and that injury could be physical, mental, emotional, any type of injury.
Okay. Now, let's talk about what is available as benefits. You were kind enough to send me some statistics. One of them I thought was fascinating. 70% of California's 1.8 million veterans are 50 years and older. That's quite a bit, considering the size of the population of the state.
It is quite a bit. But if you consider the veterans that we still have remaining in California from World War II, and there's still quite a few, and all the Korean War veterans, and then we come into the Cold War period of the late 50s, 60s, and then we go into the Vietnam era, and then after Vietnam we have another Cold War period, and then we go into the Iraq-Afghanistan and Bosnia-Kosovo era, and then, of course, the current day. So the veteran situation goes back 50, 60, 70 years.
Well, let's talk about some of those benefits. Let's start with probably the one that's most obvious and of concern to many older vets, which would be health care. What's available?
Health care is available to any veteran who retired from the military. If they served a full 20 years or more, or if they served less than 20 years and retired medically, they qualify for medical benefits. Also, any military person who has served in one of the most recent wars that we've had, Iraq, Afghanistan, and others, if they served and then a discharge after 3, 4, 5 years, they are eligible for health care benefits for up to 5 years after they leave the military.
Does a lot of that have to do with sometimes, you know, when you serve in combat, there may be mental stress that may follow afterwards that doesn't surface, let's say, when you're discharged?
Exactly. And not just mental, but also some physical ailments may show up later. And so that's why they had that 5-year benchmark to make sure that all veterans are inclusive in the health care plan even after they leave the military.
Let's talk about what those health care benefits entail. I know there's VA hospitals. Are there like HMOs, or is it mainly just a VA hospital?
Well, on the health care side, one of the benefits, of course, that's the main one that most veterans focus on is the health care. There are other benefits. But just to focus on the health care part, yes, there are over 150 VA medical centers throughout the nation, I believe 11 in California. And then each medical center, which is a hospital, has several outreach clinics, which we call CBOX, or community-based outpatient clinics. A veteran who is eligible for the health care can go to any of those clinics or to the VA medical centers themselves and receive benefits. They first must contact the VA and sign up for the VA to make sure that the VA knows who they are.
Can you tell me, Peter, is there a website that they can do this on?
Yes, there's a couple of websites. They actually do it through our department, which is California Department of Veteran Affairs, and that's cdva.ca.gov, stands for California Department of Veteran Affairs, cdva.ca.gov, G-O-V. That's a state website, and there's a link there for the federal, or they can go direct to the federal website, which is va.us.gov.
Now, we talk about some of these benefits. There's the hospital, then there's sort of like the outpatient ones. Talk about things like physical therapy, things like prescriptions, and things like that.
Yes, the hospital and medical centers have a full array of VA services that the veteran might need, in addition to typical physical and medical screening, prescriptions, visual eyeglasses, dental, if they qualify for those. And again, every veteran does not qualify for services because if a person went into the military, served 3 or 4 years or 5 years, was discharged, and they had no medical issues and no injuries, none of those things, they are a veteran. They qualify for other veteran benefits, but perhaps not the medical.
Now, there are other benefits that I was surprised that were available to veterans. Let's talk about home loans, which I would imagine be very important.
It's extremely important, and there's two ways that a veteran can access a home loan, one through the VA, which is the federal, Veteran Affairs Federal, and one through the state. The VA home loan program is a very lucrative home loan program where a veteran with average credit and has a job can apply through the federal VA for a home loan. This is available to any veteran, no matter how long they served in the military and they have honorable discharge. And the home loans are actually presented by private mortgage companies, but backed by the federal government. So the monies come from a private bank, but backed by the federal government. At the state level, our department, we have a mortgage bank that's within our own department, and we provide home loans also, but we carry the mortgage note ourselves for the full length of the loan. So a person can apply through our department, and it's not just for a home. It's for a farm, a home, a condominium, a mobile home. It could be a duplex. It could be a fourplex. It could be a number of housing arrangements that are funded through our department. And again, all the veteran needs is to show income, have honorable discharge, and be able to make the payment. And what's great about ours at the state level is that we will work with any veteran who has financial difficulty along the way. So, for example, if they lose their job and they're unemployed for a while, we're not going to foreclose on them because we own the mortgage company in our department. We just restructure the loan.
Well, that's a nice benefit, especially in times like this, and especially what we've gone through financially over the last 5 years, where some people have actually lost employment. Let's talk about eligibility for those loans. Can you describe that a little bit more?
Yes, sir. In order to be eligible for the loan, a person must have served honorably. They must have served the full tenure of their time in the military. In other words, if they signed up for 3 years and they served the full 3 years, then that's fine. If they signed up for 3 years and for some reason they were discharged prior to their full term of service for a number of reasons, they may not be eligible. But honorable discharge, average credit, for example, our mortgage rates are at the current 3.9%.
So that's below market.
It's below market. And the thing is, it's below market, but it's a good thing to have it through our department because we carry our own insurance. We offer no down payment. We work with a veteran on points lower than what they would have to go to a private bank. So it's a good deal. Any veteran that has an average job, that has average credit, can probably qualify for a loan with our department.
Something I saw that you have is financial consulting. Is it really somebody that has come under, let's say, financial duress, having difficulty, maybe they lost a job or can't find a job? What does that entail?
What that entails is we have staff in our department who are able to sit and talk with a veteran on his or her financial stability and their financial situation, to work with them for the purpose of allowing them to gain access to our housing market. And it may be that they've had some financial difficulties in the past, something that private banks would pass on because their credit history is not the greatest. But for us, it's veterans working with veterans. We would take a look at the whole veteran and what his or her potential is to allow them to enter into a contract to purchase a home through our department.
I want to move on to some of the other benefits that are available to our vets, and that's disability compensation. If you are in service and as a result of a war injury or something that occurs while you're in the military, let's say you're discharged, I would think that as you're discharged, that would come automatically. Is this something that you have to apply for? Or let me give you another example, Peter. What if, as you said, maybe it's a mental difficulty that develops as a result of combat that does not surface until later on?
Yes, you would think that would come automatically, but it does not. And the reason it does not is that many times the military service, before the person is discharged, does not know that a person has a disability, and so it could come afterwards. Typically what happens when a person is about ready to be discharged from the military, they are sent through a very extensive medical and mental screening process. And if they show any signs of mental, emotional, depression, or any kind of physical injuries, those are recorded. And a person then is provided a percentage of a disability based upon the nature of their illness. If they're already out of the military and they've been discharged already, they can go to the VA and, again, get the medical and mental screening. And based upon their malady, be given a percentage of disability based upon how severe it is. And that's why we have the five-year extension when a person leaves the military, because some of these symptoms may not develop to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years after the person's out of the military. And we want to make sure that that person is covered with medical insurance from the VA after they're out of the military.
Explain the difference between, let's say, disability compensation and a disability pension.
A disability pension is provided to a person who was in the military and they're injured in the military, or they retire from the military. They're about ready to retire from the military, but they have some type of injury or illness that occurred while they're still in the military. Instead of giving a regular pension, they're given a disability pension at the time that they are discharged. And the difference is that a disability pension is tax-free. And a service pension, in other words, service pension meaning they've served 20 years or more, is not tax-free.
Tax-free. That's nice.
If they're disabled. The other pension is actually a disability payment, is what it is. When a person is out of the military, but they bring into civilian life some problem that they suffered in the military, they are assessed by the federal VA. And based upon that medical condition and how severe it is, they are given a percentage of a pension. A percentage can range from as low as 10% up to 100%. And it's usually in 10% increments all the way up. And that's based upon the nature of the injury and the severity of it. Now, some medical conditions are what we call presumptive. Presumptive means If you were in the military and you served in a certain part of the world in these time frames, it's presumed that these illnesses you have were caused by the military. Let me give you one example. And we're talking about Vietnam-era veterans. Agent Orange is the one that comes to light. If a veteran served in Vietnam during certain years when Agent Orange was used as a defoliant in that country, and the veteran was affected, years later, we're starting to see that veterans show up with injuries and illnesses that has been determined caused by Agent Orange. Some of these include diabetes. Some of these include ischemic heart disease. And there's a number of illnesses that are presumed to be caused by Agent Orange, and they qualify for a disability payment.
I want to move on to some other benefits that are available. One is mortgage insurance and also life insurance. Let's talk about that.
Life insurance is offered by the Department of Defense. When a person enters the military, when they first enter, they have the option of taking out a life insurance policy payable to whomever they would like to have. And it's a very low rate of payment on the life insurance. And it's offered when a person first goes into the military, typically during boot camp or basic training or officer training courses. Usually at that point in time, most young people don't think in terms of life insurance. They see that as so far down the line, they're not interested. But the Department of Defense does a good job of selling them on the idea that this is not for you. It's for your next of kin. It's for someone who would benefit if something were to happen to you. So they sell that, and when I say sell, I don't mean dollars and cents, but in terms of ensuring that the veterans have all the knowledge that they can make a decision to take out the life insurance. Now, after a person is in the military, of course, they can also take advantage of that at a higher cost. But once they leave the military, then they would then take out an insurance policy just like any other civilian would at some private company.
I want to talk about something that really helped our economy after World War II, and that was education benefits. Can we talk about that?
Yes, sir, we can. That's a great subject to talk about because, you know, education is the key to success for anyone, not alone just veterans. And it's been said that after World War II, the GI Bill and World War II veterans built the nation, rebuilt the nation based upon education. And many of our community colleges and state universities in California were built after World War II with all the veterans returning. Fast forward to now, it's still important that veterans have education. And there are a number of programs and benefits that veterans qualify for education. For example, a veteran in the post-9/11 GI Bill, which, you know, after 9/11, is a very lucrative program for veterans in education. A veteran can leave the military and then attend school at the expense of the government, and this is not a gift. It's something that they've earned by serving in the military, that they can attend college or university or trade school and have the federal government pay for it. It's not everlasting. There's a limit on it, but typically it's enough to allow a veteran to go and get up to 2 or 3 full years of college or university credit. Now, the good part about that is that if the veteran is still in the military, they're not discharged yet, they can elect to reassign those benefits to a spouse or child. But they must do that before they leave the military, which means that a person in the military now can reassign his or her education benefits to a son or daughter, or split it between a son and a daughter, or split it 3 ways, and they then can go to college or university at no cost.
Wow. So as we take a look at all these benefits and bring this to a conclusion, we've got benefits that are health care. We have benefits in terms of purchasing a home. We have college education. We have disability and disability pensions. We have financial consulting. There are a lot of benefits here. I think a lot of vets, Peter, probably aren't aware are available to them.
And that's part of our mandate, and that is to get the word out to veterans. We have a Veteran Services Division here in our department, and our focus is on reaching those veterans to inform them of their benefits, to encourage them to register with the federal VA to take advantage of these benefits. But in addition to the federal VA, there are also state benefits, and every state has different benefits based upon the state. Here in California, we have a lot of state benefits. For example, a veteran can take advantage of free hunting license, free fishing license. They can take advantage of some library opportunities. There's a number of things that we do here in the state of California that offer to veterans. There's some opportunities with DMV, and there's some opportunities to have their military training suffice for licensing of the same position in civilian life here in California. So there's a lot of different advantages that we have here in California.
Peter, does the VA ever get involved in, let's say, job placement or helping retiring vets to get jobs? Let's say I was in the military, I'm back from the war. You know, it's a tough economy out there. Is there any counseling or any kind of benefits in trying to get vets jobs after they are released from the military?
Actually, that starts before the release. Most military services now have what they call a TAP program. T-A-P stands for Transitional Assistance Program, where every retiring or military person leaving the military must go through a 1 or 2 week transition program where they are given instructions on how to access their medical benefits, their educational benefits, housing, all the things that we've just talked about. But the important thing to talk about is jobs, because that's really the key to everything. And once a person leaves the military, there are a number of programs here in California and other states that will assist the veteran in acquiring a job. For example, we work with a number of private nonprofit organizations whose focus is on jobs for veterans. Additionally, we have a number of large corporations and small companies in California that have special hiring programs for veterans. And some even give veterans preference points in some county and city governments. But in terms of corporations, there are a number of corporations in California that focus on hiring veterans as a priority. And so every veteran is focused toward those companies. These companies are also identified in the veteran centers on campuses. Most colleges now have a veteran center, which is a place for veterans to go to congregate, to mingle, to talk to each other. These companies have a presence in those centers with information available. So there's a number of ways that veterans can access information about potential jobs.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of benefits here that aren't being taken advantage of. Peter, as we close, I'm going to give out your website that you've given me. It's called CalVet, calvet.ca.gov. That's for California. And what was the other website that you had?
In California, it's CalVet, that's calvet.ca.gov. But you can also use CDVA, which stands for California Department of Veterans Affairs, .ca.gov, either one of those. At the federal level, it's USDVA, that stands for United States Department of Veteran Affairs, .us.gov.
And also, there's a toll-free number here. It's 877-741-8532. And Peter, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. We've been speaking with Peter Gravett at the California Department of Veteran Affairs. And I want to thank you for bringing our listeners up to date. A lot of great stuff here that hopefully people will find helpful.
So thank you for the opportunity to speak to veterans and encourage all veterans to sign up with the VA for benefits.
You have a good day, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that concludes my interview with Peter Gravett. Once again, there are a lot of benefits here, as we briefly touched upon here, that really are not being taken advantage. I know here in California, Peter sent me some statistics. There are like 1.8 million veterans in a state that has a population of about 33 million. So if you're a veteran, maybe you've been discharged, coming back from the war, you're having some issues, please take advantage of these programs because they're out there. You just need to access them. And so, you know, just go to CalVet, calvet.ca.gov, and there's a lot of information there. Hopefully you'll find helpful. Well, that concludes this week's program. On behalf of Kathleen Harris and myself, Jim Poplava, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.